You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our iZombie BoobTube version of our podcast. We're going to be talking about iZombie Season 1, Episode 4, Live and Let Clive. See, that's where you were supposed to like laugh and giggle because you just love the title of this episode so much.
And I was holding it in because I was trying to be polite. See, this is where it takes me.
Hi, everybody. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my Polish podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Greetings, Alex.
Hello, everybody. And let me just start by saying, it's not paranoia if they are out to get you. I feel like this episode validated my lifelong motto.
So does that mean that you're eating the brains of an Asian witness protection program guy who's paranoid about everything?
Well, I don't know, but maybe there's something in my food. You never know. Especially now, I will be questioning every single meal that I get on the table. Because let me just say that apparently paranoia pays off. Because, like Liv, you know, she saved herself. But in the meantime, you know, you will not be able to tell me that I'm wrong, because this episode proved to me that, yes, I am right in being paranoid, and that old lady from the other building who always looks out the window is probably up to no good, and I should probably report her to the police.
Alex, I would never tell you you were wrong, at least not while we're talking to each other. I'll wait till I sign off and you're 7 hours in the future and can't hear me. See, self-preservation. I know how it works too, okay?
I know. But hey, you have to admit that live on a paranoid brain is probably one of the more entertaining lives we will ever see.
I don't know, I kind of liked her on the artist's brain there. We're talking about Liv here, so let's go ahead and just dive into Liv and Company first as our whole section here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Liv eating this paranoid brain.
And that's yet another sentence I've never thought I'd hear. But come on, it's something I will probably always enjoy about this particular show, is seeing Rose act out all those emotions that are foreign to her, you know, Liv Prime, Liv character, as she is as a zombie. And just watching her, you know, freaking out over seeing Major with a girl who no doubt is angling to move in because Liv isn't living here, you know, anymore. And she just, you know, took the mug. It was Liv's mug. How dare she? Which I can totally relate to because even though I have like 50 different mugs, I have 4 that are mine, and nobody is allowed to touch them. And I would probably freak out as well. So I relate to Liv on a deep level from this episode.
Well, especially when it's Jenga Girl. I mean, at least I hope it was Jenga Girl. I hope Major isn't playing the field a little quite
I'm
so
okay
much.
I'm okay if Major is a slut. I'm okay with it. Everybody is allowed to sleep around, you know, deal with their emotions and breakups in their own way, as long as he realizes that there are rules and the girls that he sleeps with are not allowed to use the mug. Apparently they won't anymore because Liv took care of that. But hey, there
definitely are rules. Not going to be doing it. Well, you know, my favorite part of that whole thing was the fact that this is a CW show. You know, you always talk about, when we're talking about Gotham or Sleepy Hollow, about how that's a Fox show and they need to learn from the CW.
Yes.
And show a little more skin. Thank you. Hello, Major. I want Major to stay in the show a little bit longer. I'm glad that they're finding a reason for him to stay in the show because, you know, the whole towel scene was quite nice.
You did tweet out at me, one of the directors whose sole mission was to get Major in a towel. And let it be known, we do appreciate it. Because it was a nice view. I mean, I watch it for the plot, you know? But I feel like from now on, I will be watching for the plot a little more.
I don't know, I was kind of distracted at first with that. So thank you, Major. I do appreciate that. And you can do that. This could be like on a soap opera. We always used to joke how on the soap operas you had your obligatory man in the towel or man that was just getting dressed. You had to have that at least once an episode. So that would be fine with me.
I would be okay with the creative direction if they decided to take it. Strangely okay with it. I feel like the plot would benefit from it. I really do.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. Just wanted to make sure that was abundantly clear. I like how they did set that up, though, with her trying to apologize very nicely with the apology. And then we had Surfer Dude Guy being kicked out on his speakers. Setting up this whole situation where Liv sees an opportunity to keep Major from continuing on with Jenga Girl and setting up a bromance between Major and Ravi.
I gotta say, I really enjoy the way they found a way to keep Major around, but not solely as a two-dimensional character that allows Liv to emo all over, you know. Oh, exactly. My God, I broke up with Major, but I want to be with Major, but I can't be.
Yeah.
I like how they...
It made sense, too.
Yeah I really like how, you know, Major will be around, but will have some, you know, contact with characters other than Liv. His friendship with Ravi will no doubt develop, because, you know, games... And gaming and will do that to people. I want to see more of him. I'm pretty sure that with his shelter gig, he'll show up also in one of the cases as well later on. But I feel like Ravi is such a great influencer, basically enabler of it all. That, yeah, I'm not going to move in with Major. Ooh, I like Major. Let's move in together. Ravi just pulled a fast one on everybody, but I'm happy about it. I want to see Ravi outside of the morgue.
One thing I really liked about the whole situation, too, was Robert Buckley, who plays Major.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that we like you when we actually learn your real name, not just your character's name. So Robert Buckley plays Major Lillywhite. And what was that, two episodes ago with the artist one, when he the way he delivered that whole line about, you know, oh, because you were hot. Just kidding. Not really. The way he delivered it, I thought was so wonderfully comedic, but also very genuine. That interchange, I was wondering if they were going to be able to continue up with that. That interchange that he had with Ravi when he first comes into the morgue, when Liv has told Major, but has said nothing whatsoever to Ravi that she's told Major. You know, Ravi, as far as he's concerned, is still living this week-by-week bachelor existence kind of thing. And that awkwardness, the way they both played it in that initial one, was just so brilliant that I'm like, okay, Robert, you have stepped up into that level that we have for Ravi. Major and Ravi both have this really natural, easy way of interacting and this chemistry. And it wasn't just because Major had this relationship with Liv. This is how Major is. This is how Robert Buckley is portraying him, and how comfortable he can inhabit this role. I loved seeing that play, because like you said, it was so awkward, that first meeting there.
Mm.
And then you see them, this total uber romance about moving in and the gamers, you know, like, well, if you don't mind the booming in my, you know, my room. And he's like, oh, would that just be confined to your room? It's like, well, you know, blackout, I'm fine with blackout curtains in the living room. And suddenly they're just clicking in a way that is, again, I always think with actors that that's something that is either instantaneous and it clicks perfectly like mm-hmm. that, or you have to work so hard and so long to try and achieve that kind of naturalness. These two men are doing a fabulous job, and I can't wait to see more of them together.
Yeah. At the same time, I really am looking forward to seeing Major with Clive, with Babineau, because you just know after the last week's episode that at some point Major will be talking to Clive again about his poor missing juvenile delinquents.
Or yeah.
Whoever they are. So I like that the characters are starting to have relationships outside mm-hmm. of their relationship with Liv. I would appreciate a little more female characters. Like, I don't really like that in order for us to meet Liv's brother, we had to lose Peyton for an episode. Like,
well, but she is classified as a recurring character, not as a main character. So that's
know,
to be
but
expected.
When
she's
your
gonna be
sole,
in and out.
Female character is a regular character. Every other female character will be a recurring one. And I feel like, Liv doesn't have enough contact with other female characters. So, mm-hmm. to get her only friend right now, Peyton, to leave for some sort of a conference or whatnot, just to have Liv's brother come in, it didn't sit right with me. Which was probably one of the very few things I didn't like about this episode.
I like that she wasn't there for this, because to me it did help with the brother character, with Evan. I loved, that was just so cute, how he's just, I'll be in, you know, when Liv says, go to my room, and I'll be in Peyton's room. He's just got such a crush on her. It's just so cute. This cute little, he's got maybe 14, 15. He's actually cute. I like that. So I could see why she needed to go for that. What I hope, because I totally agree with you, that the thing that I'm looking at this episode is really great male stories and characters and interactions. And this episode actually brought home to me even more how few women we have in the show. And like you were saying, how so many of them are reoccurring, whether it's Sugar Mama or it's Peyton, or I'm sure we'll see more from Liv's mom. We need something, we need more of the female presence in this. I'm hoping that maybe they're trying to establish these particular roles with the guys first, because this is her ex-fiance, this is her one friend that knows she's a zombie, here's the police guy, here's the bad guy. I'm hoping they're just trying to establish those enough that maybe Peyton will move from recurring to a regular, because I thought she did really great last week in her episode and her interactions with Liv. I definitely want to see more of a female presence beyond just Liv.
See,
because actually for me in this episode, the character that, and it not, I don't mean flat, she wasn't flat, but the character that I cared about the least really was Liv, because everybody else was shining so much more. She did a very good job, but I'm like, okay, it's tough when she's the only female.
See, the problem is that most of the time I'm able to say that I'm cautiously optimistic about the show, you know, how I will trust the writers and just wait to see how they do. You've heard me say this many, many times before. But my problem with iZombie here is that I know Rob Thomas, and I know his track record as far as Veronica Mars goes.
Okay.
And right now, with what we're getting from the male characters and from the sole female lead, is pretty much a rehash of not characters themselves, but of dynamics, more or less, you know, broad strokes, of what we got in season one of Veronica Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And it will, you know, so I can't even say that I'm cautiously optimistic that they will introduce some meaningful female characters that are not Sugar Mama, who I don't think has a name still, you know?
Jackie.
Jackie.
Jackie is her name.
At least that. We can start calling her Jackie. Just, you know.
I better remember that name since it's my mother's and my sister-in-law's name, so.
Yeah, so we'll call her Jackie name from now on. But it took ages to get meaningful, regular female characters on Veronica Mars. Veronica Mars started mm-hmm. with more than one regular that was female. But aside from Veronica Mars herself, they weren't, you know, three-dimensional, meaningful, with actual story arcs, female characters. So I can't even be cautiously optimistic. And I have this tiny little voice at the back of my head saying, don't get your hopes up. This is awesome. The characters are awesome. But don't get your hopes up. Because I don't know if I'll get what I want from this writing team.
I wonder, well, even not so much this writing team, even though you've got the history with Veronica Mars, which it was a very good show, but I only caught it sporadically. I wonder if this is, you know, something that goes along with the procedural. Because if I think of the straight procedurals that are out there right now,
mm-hmm.
when there's a female character, you have, they it's like they seem to make such a point of making sure that you have this female character that is in a main lead role. I mean, you look at something like Castle or Forever or, you know, not as much some like the NCIS or the CSI, because those are more group ones, but where mm-hmm. you have actual lead leads and then a great supporting cast. If you start looking at it, it's like this one really great female character, and then they're surrounded by males, and it's almost like they have to find a way to get another female in there and really make her important and part of that
yeah.
whole group. It seems like, well, we've got our one great female. We have Beckett. So do we really need anybody else? Well, yeah, we need Lainey in there. We'll throw her in there occasionally. You know, but it's mainly going to be these other guys that are the big ones. So it's, I don't know if it's, we have our, like the checklist. We have a great female character. We'll just bring other ones in, or I don't know. Because I would like to see more of that. It does seem lacking.
Yeah, and it's like, remember how last season on Orphan Black, we always said that Sarah, who was supposed to be the main character,
mm-hmm.
was often, you know, fell flat in comparison to other characters? I mm-hmm. don't want it to be Liv. I don't want other episodes to end up with you saying that Liv fell flat. Because right now, she's the lead. She's the only female character we're going to get. So, mm-hmm. I want more. I want more from her. I want more from writers. Basically, I want more. And I did not thought that we would rant at all during this episode, because the episode itself was absolutely amazing. And here we are. See, people, Sci-Fi for Chicks, we can rant about anything.
I'm hoping that it's just a symptom of new show and wanting to make sure that they do develop those characters, because somebody like Major definitely ran the risk very early on of, and you even said this just a few minutes ago, of why is he still here?
Yeah.
Why do we need him? He doesn't fit in the plot. This doesn't work. And so maybe it's just, we need to establish why Major is still there and get him connected. We need to get Ravi, like you said, out of the morgue. Or out of just doing Scooby Gang type things with Liv. We need to get Babineau to actually have more dimensions and to have that, even though we didn't see his outside life in this, we saw that he thinks about that, that's a concern, that he's not just this police robot, that's all he does.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's just a symptom of where they are in the series and making sure that, okay, we need to figure out how to make these guys important too. And in this episode, Liv suffers a little bit more, but that won't be the case going forward. And like I said, maybe they'll work it where Peyton does end up becoming a main character. I mean, she's a lawyer, for goodness sake. It makes so much sense that she should be in there just as much as Major, because she is friends with Liv and could run into things on the police side.
Mm-hmm.
And Major now is friends with Ravi, roommates with Ravi. And so he can also kind of mesh into that whole life as well. So I can be ever hopeful.
Yes, you can be hopeful for both of us.
I have to be hopeful for both of us. Something that I am hopeful for is that the panel titles, there are some really good ones this week.
Yeah.
There were a couple that were kind of, some of the good ones, well, some of the ones that were kind of, it's like, it's a shame about Ray, how to charm a cobra, you know, that they were okay. But we had some good ones like mourning ritual with the mourning because of being dead. The friend zone. Ugh.
Oh, that was a good one.
You never want to hear those three words. You're in the friend zone. We also had mistrust and obey. Martial arts and crafts. Okay, see, they're still doing really good. And then I know your favorite.
Oh, yes.
In Clive we trust.
And come on. People who name things that are not character names are still going strong. Because, let's face it, not only the episode title, Live and Let Clive, is absolutely hilarious. In Clive We Trust is just... When I saw it, I had to pause the episode because I had to giggle my way out of the insanity that just took over. It was so hilarious. And I found that in this episode, I fell in love with Clive a little bit. And hey, you never know, I might even keep calling him Clive after this.
I'm still on Babineau. Babineau's as close as I can get. He just still doesn't look like a Clive.
Yeah, but when you...
I love you, Malcolm, but...
Yeah, but come on, I might even start calling him Clive if he keeps this up, because he showed so many new faces, you know, so many sides to himself in this episode, in Liv's visions, in, you know, present day, I don't know how to call it, in him being a cop, which, you know, he's going strong with that. He did good. He did really good. And I liked getting some backstory to him, because they framed him in the pilot as the, you know, he was in Vice, but now he was in Homicide, and people didn't really like him in Homicide, and I liked how they gave him a little more serious backstory, mm-hmm. and once again established that despite the somewhat weak performance in the pilot, he's a really good cop. I enjoyed that. I enjoy competence, basically.
Well, when it comes to the whole crime section of this TV, of this episode, the actual procedural part, I have to say that his character, what we learn from him, what we glean from him, what you see, how he acted in the visions, and how he acted now, especially that final speech when he's talking with Liv and actually explaining this. That was really the only part of the whole crime thing that I even cared a lick about. Well, no, okay, I will take it back. Actually, her visions, I like the fact that they helped show how nervous and paranoid and anxious this guy was, which we learned because he's in the witness protection program. But when you're seeing things, did you notice that you saw the eyes blinking a lot?
Yeah.
You saw the eyelashes. Like, you actually saw that. It wasn't just this camera open lens kind of thing. You saw that, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm blinking, I'm nervous. So I like that too. But I didn't care a lick about the crime. I liked finding out, like you said, more about Babineau's past, about what happened on Vice, about how the suspension was a cover, and how even when he came back, he wasn't accepted. When she went and visited his former partner, and how cold she was about it, and, you know, like, this didn't like him at all, you really got the sense when he started talking that he really did feel bullied and ostracized and not a part of that group, and that it was supposed to be a fresh start over in Homicide. And I had empathy for him. But the whole crime part, to me, just, I didn't care. I knew it was just there to help Liv get to the point where she questioned him.
Yeah,
it was. And now she's not going to. Yeah. This whole crime really seemed like a means to an end of, I need to question him and his motives and not trust him. And at the end, really, really trust him. Because his speech at the end, I loved it. I thought that was great. The crime, I don't even remember everything. It was an Asian mob thing. I know that. That's all.
I have to agree with you on the crime thing. I couldn't care less about the details of the crime. But what stood out for me, for you, it was the lashes and how paranoid the guy, the victim was. What stood out to me was how unreliable those visions are. I think it was with the, in the episode with the painter, that we talked about how about unreliable narrator, right? How Liv is basically becoming an unreliable narrator, and they just drove that point so well, you know. Oh my God, Clive has to be is a dirty cop, you know, with added on paranoia, which we already established isn't a bad thing because they are out to get you. But how, without context, those visions painted one picture that was so far from the truth. I really enjoyed that, you know, final reveal, so to speak, that put all those visions in context. And suddenly, you know, painted a whole different picture. I like that, you know, it wasn't so much a plot twist, because, come on. But this change of storytelling for Liv, when she realized, I might have been a little bit paranoid, yes, but I also might have been wrong.
Well, what I think that I'm really kind of getting from the visions is the fact that actually the visions are incredibly accurate, but like Babineau says, too bad those visions of yours don't come with footnotes. She doesn't understand the context. She doesn't understand what's going on. She's not getting the full picture. So she's seeing everything, how it actually happened. She just has no context. And so she is with the artist. She was, of course, being overwhelmed by the emotions of that vision that she was seeing and not getting the whole picture. With this guy, she was being overwhelmed by the anxiety and anxiousness and only seeing these snippets and not getting the full information. So she has to learn that, yeah, that, like you said, there's more of a narrative here than she's getting. She's getting visions. She's not getting the movie or the full book or the series. She's getting the cliff notes. And not even
I'm looking forward to seeing how they learn to interpret what she's seeing. Because Clive is getting the worst out of this, because Liv is the one seeing them, and what he's getting are her interpretations. Unless, of course, she writes down the, you know, ID number or something. But other than that, Clive has to base everything on Liv's interpretation of the vision. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they learn to exchange those information and learn how to interpret it. Because
Something that I think is interesting, I think they cracked the door open on this, is in that same part where he's explaining everything to her. And not scolding her, but, you know, just saying, really, you didn't believe me, you didn't you know, Vice, come on. We all know in Vice you go undercover. And, you know, he's talking about everything he had to go through and giving up a year of his life for all this and everything. I like when he says the line, do you know what it's like to be someone you're not? And it almost seemed when he said that, that look on her face, it's like it opened the crack or unlocked the door or something to eventually maybe her letting him on the Ravi and her secret, the whole bit. Because, I mean, she made a point, too, about how having Ravi there is what helps keep her sane. Because she has somebody who does see her.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm hoping that that's a crack that has happened that maybe she'll let him in. I mean, because we already have, you know, Ravi really does see her exactly how she is and everything. I mean, when we have him talking about how, you know, why Major let him, really did let him be a roommate. It's not just because, you know, the line when Major says he had me at 4K Ultra HDTV, which, yeah, that's pretty awesome. But the way Ravi was talking about how he, Major thinks that she's sending him a signal that you don't want to let him go. And she's like, no, I don't. He's like, uh-huh, sure, really? No? Okay, sure. Whatever you say. I feel like that's where they're trying to get Clive, too, is to get some kind of, or her to want that kind of understanding with Clive as well, and open up those circles. So I hope that that's what this story did, because, yeah, the crime, whatever. Quite honestly, whatever.
Pretty much. We ran here for the characters and Major in a towel. But the characters. The crime is interchangeable with other crimes. So
no.
Whatever.
Well, I think it is where it's going to be tough because there being a procedural where here's our crime, the setup, the playthrough, and the finish. And wrapping it up in one episode while they also have this drama that's ongoing in it. And I think trying to figure out the best balance on those is one of the things that they're really going to have to kind of figure out, because you've got Clive, who's a, I really like Malcolm. I like how he's delivering things, but he is stuck in that one episode at a time kind of loop.
Yeah.
Where you have somebody else like Blaine, who has this continually growing arc across the storylines. I mean, we even started out with Blaine. Let's go ahead and move on to Team Zombie here. When he's with Jackie at the beginning, and I love his line where he said, oh, Jackie, I made you a zombie, but I'd never make you a whore. This is a guy that in two episodes, because it was only two episodes ago, that he really found out how that he wasn't alone, that he wasn't on the outs, that he's not just scrambling on the streets trying to figure out how to get his next brain, and found out how he made Liv a zombie. In two episodes, he already has Jackie financing him. He's got somebody who is obviously a zombie and is cooking things up in, you know, Michelin star kind of fashion. He has henchmen to spare. He has a whole plan, you know what I was thinking?
He has clients, because he has the entire list of clients. Other zombies.
This is somebody that, Alex, quite honestly, I'm like, maybe you keep talking about the Gotham Arrow.
Yeah.
Crossover. How you want that to happen. I'm almost wanting an iZombie Gotham one, because he would be an awesome supervillain in Gotham, because he would do so much better than some of them that are over on Gotham. You know, the zombie, that could be his
moniker.
You know, DC moniker there. I am loving him. I mean, even going down to the spray tans and the brain smoothies and, like you said, the list of everything and those procedures. He was, besides Major in a towel, I think he was my favorite part of the episode.
He was brilliant. I mean, I know that we spent a lot of time bemoaning his rather, you know, terrible name. But, oh my god, is this guy a genius or what. I still don't know if he's patient zero, so to speak, or not, but this guy has an idea on what to do with his afterlife, so to speak. Because, you know, he could be like Liv. Oh my god, I'm a zombie, I can't be with the man I love, and blah, 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 let's do the best that I can. No, he found a niche, and he is exploiting it. Like, I am impressed. Like, this is a criminal mastermind at the top of his game, and unless he has another hidden agenda that's not all about profit and building his zombie customer client list, I'm pretty sure that, yeah, he's one of the better criminals I've seen on the vast number of TV shows that I watch. And I watch a lot of them. He's not only the best, he is quickly growing to be one of my favorite villains, or, you know, antagonists, because you can't really tell if he's, you know, outright evil or just an antagonist when it comes to Liv, but I am enjoying Team Zombie. I really am.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's got so many great lines, including to that one about, "I would never make you a whore." I mean, brains are for closers, and don't stare at them, they're thinking. And he's got these great lines that he delivers, for me at least, not sounding like, hey, the writers gave me a great line, let me showcase it.
Yeah.
They seem very throwaway and natural to Blaine, and how he's doing it, and the way he's enjoying the brains that woman was making up for him, and the way he's dealing with his henchmen there, who talk about having no brains. My goodness, those two just really cracked me up about wasting their potential. And if someone's winning, someone's losing, that's freaking science. Like, oh my goodness, that's, you guys really are stereotypically wonderfully funny. Especially, oh, I love the line too, when it's like, you know, it doesn't take body fat to have a fat idea. Like, oh, that one. That one's painful, but it's beautiful in who's delivering it. I loved it.
No. But hey, on the plus side, the show did answer your question whether or not Blaine knows the, you know, side effects of eating brains. Because when he was on the phone with Jackie at the very end of the episode, you know, "I have something that will make you feel like a teenager again."
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, ugh.
That's nice.
Poor Jerome. Which we know, because we had the last episode when we talked about, hey, cool kicks, and now the one henchman wants the shoes. So we know that's going to come back in and bite somebody.
Yeah.
Not in the butt, but in the brain, I have a feeling. Yeah, I'm wondering what he knows about them, because when you look at how, or if there's something about how he can control himself too. When you look at how Liv is taken over by the passion, by the coldness, by the paranoia, by the, you know, the Eastern European, the Romanian, whatever she was speaking, yeah, or the trivia facts, when she is so taken over, is he thinking at all about, like, who he's eating? You know, you are what you eat. Literally, for these guys. You know, our zombies on here really are what they eat. So, is he looking at who he's eating to enhance certain things? Did he eat some sort of business mastermind, whatever, that helped him there? I don't know. Because he is, like you said, he's smart. This is going to make you feel like a teenager. And it is a teenager. Poor Jerome.
I am looking forward to seeing the next step. Because you know that he's not going to end with a healthy client base and, you know, way to supply brains and a few henchmen. So I'm looking forward to seeing what his plan is along the way, and B, to seeing whether or not he's careful enough so that nobody notice people are missing. Which, you know, probably won't last long. I give it like an episode or two.
Well, they, yeah, in the previews for next week, it's like, no, all these street kids are missing.
Gasp! Shock! You did not see it coming. But yeah.
I know. Well, and you have even in, when you go back into the crime part, and Clive is talking about, you know, you thought I was dirty. Well, we'll deal with it later, he says. And he starts talking about that there was a shipment of utopium.
Exactly.
So I'm like, okay, we're keeping that thread alive. The utopium is important. And like you're saying, here we have Blaine that's got this client list. He has, I mean, I counted, we had, what was it, six? I think I had six henchmen on ice. Yeah, there's six henchmen on ice. You had the two that he just killed, because loyalty is job one there. And he has this whole list of clients. This guy's been busy in episodes.
Yeah.
He has been busy. And I told you, he wanted to go from the bottom of the totem pole when he was the drug dealer. He wants to be the kingpin. He wants to be the Falcone of this. And he's already there. That's why I was saying, he needs to go over to Gotham. Because I think he would be awesome over there. A lot better than Lovecraft. But that's another podcast.
Not to mention that David Anders is really good. So wherever he goes, it'll be epic. So I'm really thrilled that they were able to cast him in this, because I can't wait. The way they foreshadow different things, and, you know, leave you a little hint here, a little tip there, and I'm pretty sure later on it will all come together in a way, you know, lack of female characters aside. Rob Thomas knows how to tell a good story. So I am looking forward to what's coming. And not only because I saw in the previews that Arthur Pendragon is going to be on iZombie. I am looking forward to the future, basically.
Well, yeah, David's been doing just a really fabulous job. And if you look back at some of the stuff he's done, he's had some good runs on shows. Anything from a couple episodes to like a 15-episode arc to, you know, you go back to Alias when he was in the main cast with 47. But one of the recent things that he did was when he was on Once Upon a Time, he was Dr. Frankenstein. Which, oh my gosh, this would be such an awesome, you know, what can you do with Frankenstein? And it's a fairy tale, and so you can really make him cool. And it just, you could tell that the writers went, well, we've got Frankenstein, we've got David Anders, but we want to go this other way. We want to do this other, and it just fell so flat, and he didn't get a chance to be deliciously, wonderfully multi-layered, I think, in that.
Yeah.
Which, come on, Dr. Frankenstein, that's like such a great one for that. I look back at some of the other stuff that he's done, and I can see where he's just pulling all this stuff in and making Blaine a character to be reckoned with. I can't wait for that moment when Liv and Blaine actually come head to head again.
Basically.
Oh my gosh. That is just going to be so awesome. I'm really enjoying this. And honestly, from that first episode, when he was just that little, you know, rage, full-on zombie mode guy that scratched her, I was like, Yeah, now I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. Love the shoes, love the purse, love it.
Well said.
Thanks. Okay, so, anything else to say on this episode before we move on to our hotness scale?
Mm-mm. No, I think we covered everything.
I think so. Okay, so Alex, on the Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale, based on the Scoville scale of Pepper Hotness, where would you rate this episode?
Well, I was wondering whether or not I should give it a 7 or an 8. I finally settled on a 7 with a little dash of 8. So basically it's a cayenne with just a lick of thigh. Just a little bit, because not all the way to the 8, but I had a lot of fun watching this episode, so I felt like it deserved a little more than just Cayenne.
Okay. I can see that. I had a tough time on this episode because all three parts for me were so totally different.
Mm.
The crime, quite honestly, the whole crime thing was an ancho, and it only got the two because of Babineau. I mean, Clive moved it up basically from a zero. I really didn't care at all about this crime. And the whole part with Liv and Major and all that, that moved up closer to like a yellow wax pepper, uh-huh, in the five range. But Team Zombie and Blaine, that was such a habanero for me. That was a nine. That I'm just like, oh my gosh, that was just so, so good. So when I average it out because of the crime, I'm staying with what I had last week in Aleppo. We're staying right there at a six.
Aww.
But I just had to say the Team Zombie part, that had me at a nine.
Because
and please,
that was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, and please give Malcolm better stuff so that he's not in the two storyline. I want him up higher. Up higher.
Definitely.
Up higher. Now, if I'm just rating it on, you know, Major coming out in the towel, well, oh yeah, that's way up there.
That's a nine. That's a strong nine.
That's a Scotch bonnet, if ever I... Yeah.
Seriously, the only reason why I'm not giving Major in the towel a 10 is that I watched Spartacus in the past. And after Spartacus, very few men actually, you know, meet the 10. So it's a strong 9. It's a strong 9.
Strong, strong. Well, we would really like to hear where you would rate this episode on our Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale. And you can let us know. You can email us, sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi for me.com. You can, of course, also call the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. And you can also go over to our Twitter, at Sci-Fi for Chicks. And I do want to say that I, Alex, I created such a big boo-boo, and I have to do a shout-out to a couple of our listeners who also commented about us. I want to thank two in particular, Kevin Lim. He favorited one of our iZombie tweets, and Thomas Townley. Thank you very much, Thomas, because I realized when you tweeted out for us and Rose McIver favorited that particular tweet about catching up on this week's iZombie, that I hadn't followed Rose or any of the other characters besides Ravi or the show itself. So...
Oh, you adorable, adorable person.
my Twitter bad. So thank you very much, Thomas, for letting me know that I wasn't following the show or its star.
Aww. Oops. You know. But you will do better.
I don't know where my brain was.
Look at us and our puns.
Oh, God, they should cast us on iZombie. I could be right there with them. We will be back next week to talk more iZombie in episode 5, Flight of the Living Dead. And do make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice so you don't miss that episode. Or, Alex, next week, we're going to get busy next week because we have Gotham returning and we have the return of Orphan Black.
Yes.
And we'll be podcasting on both of those.
Make
sure to check us out. It's going to be, I don't know about Gotham yet. We're ready to, you know, ready to talk about that a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and tease. Yeah, you're going to want to watch Orphan Black. You really are. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's awesome. yeah. And Alex already got Jennifer, my friend. I already have her hooked on Orphan Black too. She was very resistant. Yeah. One day she's already caught up on season one. So,
but that's a tale for another podcast.
That's fine. Well, and now I know I can get her hooked on iZombie, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
We'll get her there. We will see you next week. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.